Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know the old saying in the NBA, that a series does not start until somebody loses on their home floor. Except in the bubble, it doesn't really apply because there really is no home floor. But I can tell you this, the Nuggets-Lakers series would have been pretty much over if Denver did lose last night. Now notice what I said there, pretty much over. That's the level of respect I have for the Nuggets. Any other team falls behind 3-0 in a series to a team with the best record in the conference, and I'm saying that series is over. But I'm not saying that about the Nuggets. I'm never going to rule the Nuggets out. Denver is never out until Denver is on a plane, headed back to Denver. And even then, I'm not going to say they're out. I'm only going to believe they're done and they're out when that plane lands and the players go their separate ways. That's how tough that crew is. They're never dead. They're never out of it. This is why it was so ridiculous for anybody, to say that LA had won that series when Anthony Davis hit that game winner in game two. And that's why it was ridiculous.
Kind of ridiculous.
For the Lakers to show up for huge chunks of last night's game like they had already won that series. I mean, did you see LA last night? Way too many turnovers, too many fouls, not nearly enough rebounds. Like, we've got Lakers on our jersey. We're up 2-0. They're going to look for a place to lie down and die. Not the Nuggets. Not these Nuggets. Yeah, I know. They didn't shoot the ball that well from three. The Lakers, I mean. But that'll happen. The other part of that, though, the turnovers, the fouls, the lack of hitting the glass, that's not an off night. That's just focus, execution, effort. And the Lakers were lacking in all of those categories last night. I mean, you can't get out-rebounded by 19 and expect to win. Not against these Denver Nuggets. Not when the Joker is putting on the clinic that he was putting on in the first half. And it was a clinic. How about that fake up-and-under move?
Lobs it on the elbow, off over to Jokic. He spins in on Kuzma. Beat him. Reverse side layup is up and in.
Joker's a little aggressive right now.
Yes, sir. How about that shot near the end of the second quarter where Anthony Davis played incredible defense and Joker still hits a turnaround off one foot with the shot clock running down?
Harris gets to the free throw line. He dribbles down. He gets double teamed. Throws out of it to Jokic, guarded by Davis. He's hounded by Davis. Leans in on him, shoots over him. Yeah! Jumper's good.
What the hell are you going to do about that? I mean, when a guy like that hits a shot like that, you've got no choice but to acknowledge it, tip your cap, put your head down, run back up the floor. Hey, but don't get it twisted. This was not about Joker bailing them out with those crazy one-legged shots. This was about a team that came in with a plan, and they executed that plan. Michael Malone had Jeremy Grant playing the five at one point. Not only did he have Jeremy Grant playing the five at one point, the Lakers doubled Grant in the post at one point. And by the way, Grant was damn good last night. 26 points good. Monte Morris had 14 off the bench. Michael Porter Jr. had 9 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. So if you want to call these guys the others, go right ahead. Just know that the guys that aren't Joker or Jamal showed up huge last night. They're more than just two stars. But the stars did show up, especially Jamal. 28, 12 assists, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, and this bit of filth.
He has it across the timeline to the rack, and he ducked it home with the right tomahawk. And then he mean mugs everybody.
That dunk and mean mug put Denver up 20 with 10.5 to go in the fourth quarter. And just when it seemed like the Lakers would just decide that they could live to fight another day, they wake the hell up. They don't give in. In fact, they go on an insane run. The Lakers went from napping it out in game to locking down and running. They switched up the defense. They go to that zone. And suddenly Rondo, playoff Rondo, is everywhere. He had a steal, then another. And in between, the Lakers are getting out in transition, and they're making life very easy for themselves by playing downhill. All of a sudden, that 20-point blowout for the Nuggets is a 3-point lead, and Denver is reeling. They're leaning up against the ropes. They're getting pummeled. They're seemingly incapable of defending themselves. The ref is leaning in, taking a long look. because we all know how it goes in situations like this against these Lakers. You know how it went for Portland and Houston against these Lakers. The Lakers shut you down on offense. They hit you with a huge run. And before you can figure out what the hell happened, they run you right out of the gym. Admit it. You thought that was going to happen. Admit it. Admit it. You thought that was going to happen. Thank you, Alvy. Almost got you there, Alvy. You're watching that game and you're thinking, yep, LA is going to do what they do. Denver had a nice little run. A really nice run in the bubble. And the future's bright. But they are gassed out. And if you're a Laker fan, you're thinking, how many more car flags do I need to buy? I better start making plans right now to head down to Figueroa to get a good spot for that parade. Because this is what happens when the Lakers wake up and they care. Except that's not what happened. Because Denver isn't Portland. Denver isn't Houston. Denver sure as all hell is not the Clippers. This Denver team was not going to blow a 20-point lead. They were not going to blow that game. Not with Jamal Murray on the floor. And not with Jamal Murray hitting this shot with a 4-point lead.
Murray guarded by Caruso. A lot of handling, takes a tough three, and he knocked it home. That's a big bucket there. 7-point lead for Denver, 106-99. A little bit more than 2 minutes to go.
Hey, listen, there are big moments, and then there's that moment. That was a massive, massive swing. The possession before, Kyle Kuzma missed a tentative three for the Lakers that would have made it a 1-point game. Instead, Murray made it a 7-point game. Then he made it a 9-point game on this play.
Back over to Murray. Murray attacks again. Back over to Millsap and a dunk with two hands. And with 90 seconds to go, the Nuggets lead it by 9 in game number 3.
And then that 9-point game became a 12-point game when this happened.
Murray gets a pick from Nikola Jokic, high left side, takes a long three, jumpers up and in! The Nuggets lead at 111-99 in game number 3. And Hastings, this thing is
Nuggets radio, the blue arrow with an absolute moonshot. Lakers had a 21-4 run, cool. Here's an 8-0 run in less than 90 seconds. And just as the Lakers were gassing out, Murray was gassing up. When the pressure was at its highest, when it would have been easier to let go of the rope, he instead steps up, as he has time and time and time again. Joker in the first half, Murray to close it out, Grant, Morris, and Porter in the middle of everything. And so let me say it again. Because some of you still do not get it. Some of you still don't believe in this. The Nuggets are not just scrappy. They're not just tough. Man, they are flat out good. Really good. Don't buy this bullcrap narrative that they're just a bunch of scrappers who are happy to be there. Yeah, I mean, they are a bunch of scrappers. They are happy to be there. And they've got a pair of superstars and a lot of other quality guys too. And they've got belief. A ton of belief. Belief by the truckload. Hell, they could be up 2-1 in this series. And you know they know that. You know they think that. They let game 2 get away. They could be up 2-1. They know they've outplayed the Lakers in the last 2 games. And they're not about to stop right now. They're not looking for a pat on the head. They're not looking for a participation trophy. They're looking for the Larry O. So if you want to stop these guys, if you want to put these guys down, take these guys out, you need to run a stake through their heart. Just showing up and waiting for them to get tired, lie down, and die, it's not going to get it done. It's not going to get it done. Just ask the Clippers.
George, way off. It's the side of the backboard.
They're the real deal now. Not the Clippers. The Nuggets. And that series very easily could be 2-1, Denver. What do we want, clones, when we're craving protein or we need some more energy? I'll tell you what we don't want. Not a bar, not a sugary snack, or an energy drink. No, we want beef, Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It's tender. It's tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business. They're known for their relentless commitment to quality. I know these family members. I've spoken to them. This means everything to the family. They take their smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest, which goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere at all. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. And if you don't see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. None come close. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Kenny Moore, the second, is my guest. Kenny, it's good to have you on. How are you?
It's great. I appreciate the introduction.
It's good to have you on, man.
Great to be.
You got it. That's it. You earned that introduction. Listen, you're coming off that win over Minnesota where Minnesota had a field goal in the first quarter, and then you guys shut them down until a late touchdown in the fourth when the game was already decided. Let me start right there. How pleased were you with the way the defense, the entire defense, showed up on Sunday?
Solid outing for the defense. As you said, they started off with 3 points. It's a great way to end a series out on the first drive of the game, but we let some things slip away with penalties and some third down conversions by them. So we just went to the sideline and we had to hunker down for the rest of the game. So we couldn't let them get going as far as Dalvin and then their boot game with the shots to complement it. So we made the adjustments and I'm pleased with that.
Kenny Moore the second is joining us. Now you had that INT, as I mentioned, in the first drive of the second half. Some DBs have told me in the past that interceptions are a little overrated. They're not a true measure of how a DB can impact a game. All that said, how good did it feel to get that pick and stop any momentum that Minnesota was hoping to have coming out of halftime?
That pick was perfect timing as far as them having the ball with the first drive of the second half. So and then it was great that, you know, I was tackled in the area where we can earn some points. So we just want to put the offense in the best position. Unfortunately, I couldn't return it this time, but I'm definitely working on that for the future.
All right, so when you look at the guys in front of you, for instance, when Darius Leonard is doing what he does at linebacker and DeForest Buckner is getting after the quarterback and causing safeties, like, how much does that impact your approach and your job in the secondary? How much easier does it make your life, and can you be more aggressive knowing those guys are doing what they do up front?
We definitely love the rush and the key additions that we have as far as the defensive line, putting the pressure on the quarterback and throwing off timing. So, but as far as Darius Leonard, I love his juice. I love the competitive attitude that he brings to the defense. He has the personality, and his game just encourages us to match his play. So it's awesome having 5-3 in the middle of the defense.
Kenny Moore the second is my guest. You know, the coaches talk about how you and he fit into this defense the way that Derek Brooks and Rondae Barber used to do what they did. What's your reaction when you hear that comparison?
Man, I have a lot more to give to the game to be able to be in the same conversation as those two. So Darius, he's an awesome tandem to be with in this defense. You know, it starts in practice. He's a guy that comes out each and every day and wants to work, and he loves it. He loves the grind. He loves the process. So myself, I love being out there with him. It's such a blessing to be on this defense with not only Darius Leonard, but other key additions like Rhodes and Julian. He's stepping up, and AWOC, he's hitting the run, and J-Hugh. We have so many people on this defense that I just love playing with. So, but yeah, like I said, it starts in practice, and we have to turn that over into the game.
Hey, Kenny, I couldn't respect or appreciate it more that you want to make sure that everybody else is getting their love and their respect. But I want to remind everybody that when the coaches are comparing you to Rondae Barber, and analysts are hyping up the way you impact the game, no matter where you line up, I want to remind folks that you are undrafted coming out of college. What was that experience like for you?
It's been a jungle. You know, from being in college, it's easy for a guy in a Division II level to be discouraged, to seem like your dreams are vague, and it'll be a long way before you see some flourish. So to all the guys that's, you know, going through the D2 process right now, You know, they just got to keep grinding. And but the cream rises to the top. You know, if you have the goods, they'll see you. And whenever you have the opportunity, make the most of that. So, but my journey hasn't been easy, and I have a long way to go. So, there's a lot more for me to give into this game. So, and I'm preparing for that.
Let me ask you about the journey again, because you're right, it has not been easy. For instance, you signed with the Patriots after the draft. They let you go. You signed with Indy the very next day. But when you go undrafted and then a team lets you go, it might be easy to get kind of down on yourself and start thinking, maybe this is not meant to be. Maybe it's not going to work out. So where did your drive and your confidence come from to just keep on the grind and keep going?
Just by taking it one day at a time. And, you know, the studying, the flashcards, everything that I do on a daily basis to get ready for the opportunity. I just want to seize the moment whenever it comes into play. So, you know, me coming over to Indy in 2017 was a blessing in disguise. And you know, I got my foot in the door by just playing special teams. And with this sport being 100% at risk, you know, we had some starters go down and my number was called. So, you know, I'm very thankful for that year. And, you know, just being prepared and my coaches believing in me and my teammates trusting that, you know, 42 at the time, you know, had his stuff together. He had his head on right. So, and I just want to win at the end of the day.
You got to stay ready. You had to stay ready, and you were. So when you go through something like that and you come out the other end and you're playing at such a high level right now, an elite level, are you looking to prove people right or are you looking to prove people wrong? Like, is there any part of you that wants to say to every other team, how do you like me now? Now what do you have to say?
For sure. I feel like I'm overlooked, but that's not my game. My game is having that chip on my shoulder each and every time I get out there and play. So I'm 5'9", so I'll definitely be overlooked. but you know, I just got to play bigger than that roster says I am. So, you know, each time I go out there, I want to be a mad machine. So it's lightning in the bottle.
Kenny Moore II joining us. You know, if we were to go back that pick for a minute, the jersey that you wore when you picked off that pass is up for auction, and the proceeds benefit a kid again. You're on the board of the Colts chapter of A Kid Again. What exactly is that nonprofit all about?
A Kid Again is a nonprofit that it helps kids facing life-threatening illnesses, and they basically make it, you know, with all the pressure and the things that they're going through on a daily basis, they try to make things fun to make that child or everyone that they're dealing with, you know, just feel like a kid again. You know, that's really what it is. So, and I'm all in with it. And I met a great friend along the way that was in that organization that lost his battle. But I'm just doing all I can to make his legacy flourish my entire life. So it starts now.
Kane, the person you're talking about, I think, is Mason Garvey. And you developed quite a bond through A Kid Again. Mason passed away in June of this year. What was he like as a person, and what kind of an impact did he have on you?
He was a bright, calm soul. If you were to meet Mason, he'll light you up without even talking, without even speaking. So the many questions that you ask him, the better reaction you will have of him. So, you know, he loved sports. He loved his friends. He loved his family. So it was always cool whenever I walked away and went home. I would think about, you know, the next time I'm seeing him, how can I make him smile even more, you know, even more. So he was a great soul.
Good for you. Let me ask you one more thing. You mentioned that you've got this chip on your shoulder, and part of that is because you're 5'9". You know, I try not to play favorites, but one of my all-time favorite NFLer ever was Bob Sanders. And he was maybe 5'8", right? And he was flying around and doing such unbelievable damage. What did you think when you saw him play back in the day and the way he carried himself and the way he put it all out there and just laid it all out there?
Bob is one of those guys that will make you want to run through a wall. Sort of like Darius Leonard. Whenever you watch him play, he just goes beast mode. He's just a maniac. So Bob was able to strike, you know, anybody and whoever it was, whether it was a lineman or a big running back. So he's a different type of cat. He's a different type of cat, but He can definitely strike anybody, and he definitely has the intensity and the juice to play football.
Dude, he is a different kind of cat, is right. He had tremendous juice. Cornerback for the Colts, Kenny Moore II, was an All-American in college. Indy playing great ball right now, especially defensively. They're 1-1. They take on the Jets on Sunday. Kenny, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much. Good luck to you.
Yes, sir. Great to meet you.
Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? October is Fire Prevention Month, and we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you be ready and review some key safety tips. Now check this out. Smoking carbon monoxide alarms help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. Having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the best things that you can do for your home and for your family. You need to install alarms on every level and in every bedroom of your home. Once the alarms are installed, it's important then to maintain them by testing them with regularity. And remember, alarms do not last forever, and they need to be replaced at least every 10 years. I mean, after all, they are on duty 24/7. If you can't remember the last time you replaced your alarm, it is best to replace that unit completely. For a replacement option, my favorite, far and away, is First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. The alarm provides 2-in-1 protection against smoke and carbon monoxide, and I don't have to worry about changing batteries for a decade. And for more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at home with your family, visit firstalert.com/fireprevention month. firstalert.com/fireprevention month. I want to talk to you for a minute. How are you feeling right about now? How are you living? For real, Mafia. You've got to be feeling yourselves. You're 2 weeks in to the 2020 season, and you are 2-0. But it's not just about being 2-0. You've been 2-0 before. It's about being 2-0 and about the way Josh freaking Allen is showing up, the way he's playing. I mean, typically fast starts are not that unusual for the shiny up-and-coming city of Buffalo. It's pretty much what you do. Excellent quarterback play, though, is not what you do. Not for a long time. And I'm not hating. You know this because I love Buffalo. I'm not hating. I'm stating a fact. Bills fan, see Nate Pete if you need an example. Because the single biggest question coming into 2020 for the Bills was whether or not Josh Allen was going to take another step in his development as a starting QB1. Could he become that franchise quarterback that you have not had since the legend that was Jim Kelly running the K-gun in the mid-90s for you? And after a rough-ass playoff performance against the Texans, you all rightfully had your doubts and your eyeballs once again on Allen to start the year. I mean, yeah, big, strong dude who can make every kind of throw, who's got that upside. Of course you're intrigued by all that, just as you were intrigued by all the new toys they got for him in the offseason. But priority number one had to be the guy that you traded up to get with the 7th overall pick in the 18 draft, Josh Allen. But I will say this. Not that it was the greatest competition in those first two games, but through the first two games, Mafia, life is good. Damn good. He not only has passed the test so far, this guy has gone historic with it. He has aced the test so far. I'm sure you've seen the stat being thrown around the past couple of days, but it does bear repeating because it's a really impressive stat. There were only 3 players in the history of the NFL who had passed for over 700 yards, thrown 6+ TDs, and no interceptions in the first 2 weeks of a season. Only 3 guys have ever done that. Those 3 are, or were, Pinky, TB43, Patty Mahomes, and now you can add Josh Allen to that fraternity. Put him in with the other 3, Pinky, TB43, Patrick Mahomes, and your guy, Josh freaking Allen, if you need him. I know it's only 2 games. I know it was against the Jets and the Dolphins. It's a small sample size, but this guy is officially an MVP candidate, if such a thing actually exists, after only 2 games. So again, I ask the question, Mafia, How are you feeling today? How are you living right now? Because if I were you, I'd be stoked as hell. Zero INTs so far from Allen on the season. Zero. I mean, remember, since entering the NFL, the biggest question marks about this guy and his biggest issues were his accuracy and his decision making. Now, the accuracy issues may always be there. They may always rear their ugly head with this guy at the worst possible time. But you can live with that if he makes improvements and adjustments because of all the other good things that he does to help you win. As long as he continues to improve with his decision making, you can live with the accuracy issues. And two games in, he is making really good decisions with the football. So far, so great. So where are all the haters who said this guy could not fix those issues? You're all awfully quiet right about now. He followed up his most prolific game of his career. Remember, coming into the season, he had never thrown for more than 266 yards, had more than 300 in week one. Then he follows that up by being even better in week two. He passed for 417 yards against a Miami defense. I'm not saying that's the best defense ever, but I am saying that's a defense that Miami front office spent major jack on in the offseason to improve upon. Hey, Dolphin fan, let's just say that's not money well spent. Not yet. Right now, they're just burning green in South Florida. But I want to be clear about this. Not only are Allen's numbers eye-popping, and he's been validated to a certain extent early on, but the numbers themselves do not tell the whole story. What's got to have Buffalo fans stoked is the way this dude balled the hell up in Miami on Sunday when it mattered most, in crunch time in the fourth quarter. He clutched up. He manned up. Look, Sean McDermott's teams have always been about defense. They can bail out an offense as long as they do not turn the ball over too much. In Miami, though, it was Allen and the offense who bailed out McDermott's defense. The team needed him and the O to step up and come through late, and they did. They rallied from a fourth quarter deficit to get the W. Even Sean McDermott, one of the more stoic guys ever, not the most excitable guy ever, is feeling Allen. Check out his comments after the quarterback's play against Miami. Quote, he's got ice water in his veins.
Ice.
No moment is too big for him. End of quote. Hey, Mafia. The head coach is now saying things like that, and not just to pump up his young quarterback or to give him confidence. He meant that. That's a new and improved Josh Allen. The alleged face of the franchise quarterback, Josh Allen. And man, how about that trade for Stephon Diggs? How good does that look right now? And how crappy does that feel to you, Viking fan? The Vikings offense has been about the biggest disappointment in the NFL so far. How badly do you need that guy? You want to talk about a smooth transition. Look what happened to Minnesota when he left, and look at what's happened to Buffalo's offense since he arrived. I mean, this guy hits the ground running. He's already on the same page with his young quarterback. Brandon Bean gave up a ton to get this guy, and so far it looks brilliant. Diggs is a beast. This guy makes corners look stupid with the amount of separation he can get consistently. So, Bean goes out. He gets Allen a legit number one wideout in Diggs. Diggs leads the NFL in receiving yardage. Allen leads the league in passing. Two games in. How's that? Oh, Buffalo. What a great pickup by the Bills. Now, again, to be fair, and I'm not going to pump the brakes on this completely, but to be fair, I do need to see more of this. And I need to see more of this against somebody other than the Jets and the Dolphins. He owns the Dolphins and the Jets. Well, the Jets are a horrible football team. Actually, that's being kind to the Jets. What's worse than horrible? That. So, I need to see this and this offense against a better D, which is why, and I mentioned this earlier, I can't wait to see how he and they show up against a Rams defense this week. One thing to blow out the Jets, to come back on the Dolphins, a very different thing, however, to set Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey on fire and that defense. Again, Bills fan, I'm not hating. You know me, I'm celebrating. I'm here to enjoy the fact that you won a game because of your offense, because of your young franchise quarterback. that Josh Allen is looking more and more like the real thing. And if, in fact, he is, and he can keep this up, all of a sudden, we're not talking only about ripping the AFC East. We're not talking about a return to the playoffs. We're talking about maybe you challenging for the Lombardi if Allen can keep doing this. I mean, for real, when was the last time you could legitimately say that about the Bills? When was the last time you could legitimately celebrate elite quarterback play on the Bills? If this holds up, there will not be enough tables in all of Buffalo for the Mafia to bust through. Mafia, I know we do this every single year. I know you get out quickly every single year. And I'm the one to pump the brakes. Except this time I'm out with a gas can. How you feeling about this? Are you gun shy? Or are you all in? Do you believe? Because this is a really good start. And a really good start that to me is different than all those other really good starts. We'll see. We'll see if he can continue to build upon this. But so far, so great for Josh Allen. But then again, remember, we are not all that far removed from the Nate Pete days. Royalty-free techno. When you hear that, what comes to mind? Nathan. Ryan Dempster. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at Dempster46. Ryan, it's been a minute or so since you and I have spoken. How are you doing, and what has this season been like for you, Ryan?
Hey, Jim. How are you, man?
Good, dude. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. The season's been it's been awesome. You know, to be able to have baseball is strange, weird, odd. But, you know, to be able to be fortunate enough to watch these men go out and play games every day, and everybody that puts all the work into it, it's been unique, and I guess that can be the best perspective I want to try and take on it.
You know, I want to ask you what it must be like for them to compete and work and live in the type of environment that they are right now. Before I go there, it's no surprise to me that you've been doing really well as an analyst for MLB Network and Marquee Sports Network. At the same time, the transition is not as easy as you make it look. What's it been like for you to go from being an active player to an analyst?
Yeah, it's not easy, and it is a transition period, and you have to give up the fact that you're not a player anymore. As much as you want to hold on to that, but you always have the feelings of that and have the respect of, you know, what the writers do, what the media does. I thought during my career, I had a good relationship with them, and I understand it's a job for both sides to do. And sometimes there's difficult questions to ask. And I wanted to just, you know, bring this light of the off the mound aspect to that. And I love talking baseball, Jim. You know me, man. It's a great game. It's been my whole life since I was a little kid. So I think that's probably made it the easiest, is that I enjoy doing it.
Ryan Dempster, my guest, I do know that about you. Also, I think that you bring something to it. Obviously, you have a point of view, which is different. You've got an experience. But I can even make the argument that it's one thing to do it, but it's another to do it comfortably. And you've made it look pretty easy. Fact of the matter is, you grew up idolizing Johnny Carson. How old were you when you first started to watch The Tonight Show? And what was it about that particular host that you liked so much?
I thought Johnny was really poignant to make the show fun and light. And I was a little kid. I honestly, if I try to recall the year, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, maybe right around there, maybe a little bit older. And just like, it was such a great thing to go to bed laughing like that. Like, you watch the show and you're like, oh, I hated that guy's movie, but man, that was funny. Or it gave me a different opinion of some guest that I might have thought one way about. And I just loved it. I just thought it was great. I couldn't wait for Burt Reynolds to get on when they do the shaving green bit down his pants. And I'm just like on the floor, a little kid watching this, right? It's like the funniest thing since I don't know what. It was the funniest thing. So yeah, I am comfortable with it. I know I'm probably not everybody's cup of tea, but I've also put a lot of hard work into it, man. I took improv classes, do stand up, do it in Chicago, New York, New Jersey. I know how hard it is to try and do that. And I'm as green as it gets. So I'm just trying to, you know, work hard at it to show the respect to the other people that do this job.
So, Ryan, what's more nerve-wracking, getting up and doing stand-up in a club or getting up on the bump and taking the ball for a game 7 in a critical postseason series?
Two totally different feelings. Yeah, on the field. The first time I ever got up to stand up, it was the scariest, like the most intimidating thing. It was more intimidating than my first appearance, and I was like numb to that first appearance. So it was definitely nerve wracking. I had told this little joke about it was during the big dig, and the bar owner threw me a layup. He's like, "Hey, talk about the little orange cones all over the city." And I was like, "Oh, you mean the official state tree of Massachusetts?"
Right.
And they were just everywhere, you know. It was like, "Hey, the big dig," and it went well. And then I guess that made me comfortable, but I was sweating bullets, like just dripping like a July start in the afternoon in Florida. It was great.
That's got to be scary. But you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable, and you got to put yourself out there. Ryan Dempster is joining us, but I can see that. Now, you have talked about the fact that part of what you want to do in your job is to help bring the actual emotion of baseball players to the viewers so they can understand what the people who play the game really are dealing with. Like, give me an example. How would you describe the emotions of pitching in a tight game in late September? What would every single at-bat feel like when you're on the mound?
Well, I don't know. I think that's what I'm trying to bring, is that it's different for everybody. And everybody handles that emotion differently, and everybody's going through real life stuff differently. You know, athletes are great. They're superstars. They're incredible, and some of them are so good at channeling that in certain directions, and other people struggle with real life things. And in that moment, we don't necessarily know those are going on. And, you know, it's important for people to realize that, and that person out there is ultimately doing the best they can. When I'm on the mound and somebody's 60 feet, 6 inches away from me, on the 1st and the 15th, we got paid. We were both professional baseball players. One guy has to win, one guy has to lose. I'm actually going to win a lot more. And you know, I think, you know, the seeing it too from that side, being a fan of the game, and, you know, boo somebody for not hustling, cool, but don't boo somebody for striking out. Like, why? What good does that help anybody? Does it make him go like, "Man, I really got to get a hit now"? He knows that. He doesn't get down to first base? Go for it. Yeah. Yell at him. If you don't want this job, I'll take it. Like, I'll have it if you don't want to run hard down to first base four times. But because I strike out with the bases loaded, like, you know how bad that hurts me as the batter or the pitcher that gives it the grand slam? You know, and I think showing that the next time it happens, that maybe somebody goes, "Oh, you know, all right, like, I know he's trying. I know he's giving everything he got."
Right.
You know?
It is a game of failure. I get exactly what you're saying. If you want to boo effort and a guy's dogging it, that's one thing, but it is a game of failure. So I think you make a really good point. Like, so what do you think the virus and the fear of the virus, how has that impacted players? Like, you know, and you kind of touched on this, guys can compartmentalize things. Guys can block things out, but professional athletes are always dealing with, they're people. They're dealing with stuff like the rest of us are dealing with stuff. How do you think that's impacted the players? Can they block it out, or is it not that simple when it comes to the virus?
I think it's hard. I think it's hard on everybody, right? Everybody in the world dealing with this. It's a hard thing. And then all the protocols that go into going out there and playing and being safe and having families and, you know, having babies and moms and grandmas, and it's hard. I'm so close with my parents, and, you know, we don't get to see each other. So for those guys, it's the same way. It's the same type of things. And I think it's every athlete, every sport. I think it's everybody that goes to work at Home Depot, or they are working at a bank, or whatever they're doing, a professor at school. I think everybody's having a tough time with it. And those players are no different out there. And they might struggle, right? Like, somebody might be hitting 200 and we're like, "This guy sucks. Why? Why does he suck?" Maybe he just, you know, is having a tough time with the pandemic right now, and he just can't mentally focus, even though all of us tell him he just should, because it's totally fine. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes, like, I think, absolutely.
I think they're really, you know, and bravo for them for even giving it a try.
Ryan Dempster is joining us. I do know what you're saying. And then even that brings us to the question of mental health, where not long ago, professional athletes would never even broach that subject and not go there because they don't want to be perceived as weak, when that's not weakness either. That's a real thing. What about, Ryan, the Cubs and the White Sox? They both clinched playoff spots. It's only the second time since 1906 that the Chicago teams have been in the postseason at the same time. What's it like seeing both of them in the playoffs?
How about if they match up in the World Series and it's not even played in Chicago? No fans can go, and it will be played in Arlington. Oh, man.
Weird.
Let's have a big, huge viewing somewhere, Grant Park. I think it's awesome. I think it's great for the city. When I remember those times playing against those teams when they were really, really good and we were really good. And it's fun. It's a great competition. And it's something nice for people going through a tough time in the world to be able to be like, hey, my baseball team's in the playoffs. Yeah, mine too. All right, let's go. Like, it's a really cool thing. The White Sox got a young, dynamic team on the south side too. They're going to be good for a while, and the Cubs will always be good.
We're talking to Ryan Dempster for a few more moments, working with MLB Network, among others. Now, there's so many moments I could talk to you about with relation to your career, but if we go back to that moment when you were pitching for the Red Sox at Fenway and you hit Alex Rodriguez, what do you remember about that moment?
Wow. What do I remember about that moment? I remember being pretty calm through it all. I don't know. I had a different perspective than I think a lot of people did on that moment. You know, like I threw at him four times and things like that. I threw at him behind him the first one. I wasn't headhunting anybody. And then two, that I was just like, I'm not going to throw it down and away. You saw what happened the next time. I threw it down and away. You hit it over the center field wall. So it was a better play inside, but then I just got 3-0. And yeah, I don't know. I just did it. And looking back, it brought our team closer together, believe it or not, I thought, you know, and it was really cool. And we were able to win a World Series, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking to start anything at all. The reaction of the crowd in Boston was something, man. They went nuts.
Well, yeah,
they went nuts because it was A-Rod.
We were having some cold ones, and my brother told me, hey, man, like, how fun would that be at Fenway to hit A-Rod his first at bat? Like, he's with the Yankees, you're with the Red Sox. I was like, yeah, dude, perfect. And then, you know, all the preceding events started to take place. I'm like, whoa. And that just happened to be the first time. That was pretty, it's like, well, then it's fate, right? Like, if this is what we were talking about in the offseason, then it's got to happen. So, it was good old-fashioned rivalry baseball. It fired both teams up. They played really well the rest of the way. We won a World Series. I got the best paid five-day vacation I ever got. It was awesome.
Not only that, but one more thought, Ryan. The bullpen's empty, and you know Johnny Gomes is always at the ready. Johnny Gomes will go.
He was behind the shortstop, Jim.
Oh, dude,
he's
always ready. He is one of my all-time favorite guys to talk to. I love him. That 2013 team was loaded with great characters. So what was he like as a teammate, and what was the chemistry like on that 2013 team?
Well, it was great. It was great from day one of spring training. We just, like, right away hit it off. I don't know if we all knew each other from different teams and the guys that were still there and coming off of the rough year in 2012. And Johnny really took hold of the, I'm going to bring us all close together and let's eat together. Let's go for meals. It's the morning. Let's say hi to everyone. We're at work today, guys. You know, and like, I remember the first day of pitchers and catchers, and he's walking into the weight room area and I'm coming out of the shower and I just like, how you doing, Johnny? He's like, just another day closer to the parade, Ryan. And I was
great.
Like, we're going there, huh? And he goes, yep, that's where we're going all year. He would just say that, like, every once in a while. Guys, another month, and we get that parade. Like, it was just great. And he really brought that. I think collectively we brought that as a unit. We had a bunch of guys who easily bought into that. And, really cared for each other. If you look statistically at that team, it wasn't necessarily the greatest numbers. I mean, Poppy raked, and Petey had a good year, Ellsbury. But other guys had average years, but it was, like, always the right time. Like, you know, Victorino with the big grand slam. But that became moments where, like, we talked about four-run homers. We never talked about grand slams, just hitting four-run homers. And then they happened. And we were a true team of, if you believe it, you can achieve it. We said it, and then we made it happen. It was great.
You guys spoke
it. It was magical. And Johnny led the way doing that. He really did. He was incredible at it.
You guys were able to speak that into existence. Let me finally ask you, going back to Chicago for a minute, when David Ross was hired as manager, one of the things that you referenced was a story from back in the day when he told a teammate in Boston, quote, don't ever confuse my kindness for weakness. What do you remember about that moment, and what did that tell you about Ross as a person and how he would approach being a manager?
Yeah, just that he was comfortable having the uncomfortable conversation or the uncomfortable moment, and man enough to not let it carry over and fester into the next interaction. Like, I thought it was really awesome. Like, I never saw him be that way to that guy again. I saw him do nothing but, like, look out for him and try to help him and make him be a better player. And I just was like, that's awesome. Like, never felt this grudge. And just the way he was trying to win every pitch on the bench, like, while he wasn't playing. Like, and it was really cool to be around. And I just saw that leadership and the way he carried it. And a lot of people forget he got a big concussion and was, like, out for a while that year. And he just came back with that attitude and that vigor even more when he came back. And he was crucial. Salty caught a ton of games, and then come playoff time, David just showed tremendous leadership, saying things like throwing a fastball, guys, like telling us, as a starting staff and pitchers meetings, like, you have to throw a fastball in a fastball count when everybody in the ballpark knows you're throwing a fastball. Locate it, and we'll get him out. Like, whoa, okay, first of all, simple as can be. So the easiest thing we can do is just do that. And then second of all, it's the emotion of the confidence behind you that he believes you can do that. So then you're like, yeah, chest out even more. And then you just have to go out there and execute it. And then you execute it and it happens. And then you're like, oh, I can do that again. He was just, yeah, just a great teammate, a great leader. And I knew, you know, and I'm sure he's going to have the downs with the ups, but I just don't see those downs being anywhere near the ups that he'll have. He's just a good communicator and a good person and great baseball man.
So last week is in the books. Now is the time to review the tape and get ready for this week. And there is no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has got a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes that are up for grabs right now. If you have not tried DraftKings, head to the App Store right now because you do not want to miss out on this. Draft your lineup. Feel the sweat like never before. Every single run, pass, and catch means more with DraftKings. It's simple. You pick your lineup, you stay under the salary cap, and then see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at millions of dollars in prizes. DraftKings has paid out billions, with a B, billions, since 2012, so they know a thing or two about cold hard cash. Download the DraftKings app right now, use the code Rome, and for a limited time only, new users get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. Do not miss out on week 3's action. Enter code Rome, get a free shot at millions of bucks in prizes with your first deposit. Again, code name Rome, R-O-M-E, only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Let's get the phone calls in here. We go to Harrisburg. Jason, what's your beef?
What's up, Jimbo? My beef is Damon Amendolara. I just heard him do the top of the hour sports update, and I know personal appearances are not show fodder, so I never really thought those comments about him having tombstones in his mouth were very funny until I just saw his picture on the CBS website. Holy crap, Jim. Does this dude have to floss his teeth with a yo-yo? It looks like he's the love child of Liv Tyler and Alvin the Chipmunk. Ward DA doing Rock the Cradle to get between his back molars, and Ward Drizzle using a lilac blossom as a loofah. I'm out.
Personal appearance still not show fodder, Jason. Even if you think that DA needs to do Rock the Cradle to floss his back molars. Oh, damn. I got to go to the dentist tomorrow. Better mix in Around the World and Walk the Dog. Come on, man. What's your beef? Let's go to Houston. Kyle, good to have you. Kyle, what is your beef?
How you living, Van Smack?
Good, man. Good. How about you?
I'm great, but I have a beef with Parody Freaking Larry calling in last week during the beef segment. Larry, first of all, you have never had a good call. The next time you have a good call will be the first time. Stop coming in and trying to ruin yet another segment in the jungle. Some of us are using it to get our reps in, to get better, something you have continually failed at over all of the years. Stop it and be better.
Kyle in Houston has a beef with Parody Larry. 1-800-636-8686. We do this once a week. It is the What's Your Beef segment. Let's go to Sacktown. Stoney, what's your beef?
Hey, how you doing, Jimmy? Thanks
Great.
For taking the vines. I play a poker game every 2 weeks, and my beef is with all my cheap-ass buddies that smoke all my sticky icky and then look at me saying, dude, Where is it at? My name's Stoney, but I don't want to support everybody's Herb Abbott. War being able to go back to the clock and War's Hawk being able to continue staying fit. I'm out.
Stoney coming down on the guys who smoke his cron. The social media beefs are better than the call beefs so far, but maybe that'll change. 1-800-636-8686. We go to Omaha, Nebraska. Kathleen.
Omaha!
Kathleen, what's your beef?
With you. I am fed up with the whole America's team and America's quarterback. Not my team, not my quarterback. I have two quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers since I was 21 and Justin Herbert since I saw his pretty face last year.
All right, Kathleen. She goes, I said, what's your beef? She goes, with you. So you've got, you don't want to hear about QB. You don't want to hear about America's quarterback, Baker Mayfield, from me. You're sick of that. Understandable. I could see where you might be. But apparently you already have a couple of quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers and now Justin Herbert when you saw his pretty face. I thought you were all about the luscious lips of one Sid Crosby. Come on, make up your mind, Kathleen. And isn't your man in jail? And my bad. My bad. Not the luscious lips. The luscious ass and succulent lips. Thirsty much? We're running out of time. What's your beef? We go to San Diego. Connor. Connor, what's your beef? What's up? Go ahead, Connor. You are on the air. My beef is when guys are not ready. You know that it's a rapid-fire segment. We're going beef. If you're on hold, you're not going to be there very long. You're running out of time. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to Lincoln, Nebraska. Don. Don, what's your beef?
Jim, thanks for giving me the opportunity. My beef's with everybody just hating on Nebraska. It's low-hanging fruit because of past couple of years. Pat Forty, it's tired. Michael Wilbon, it's tired. Desmond Howard, it's tired. That's all I got.
All right. Lincoln, tired of the abuse. Here's the thing. I know you're proud. I know you love your Huskers. The last couple of years have not gone very well. What do you expect people to say? Got to turn it around. Jordan Hicks joining me. How much better is life when you roll out of the rack, you wake up, you go to work, and you are 2-0?
It's so much better. You know, you play this game to win, and really Monday and Tuesday are, determined mood-wise based on how you perform on Sunday. So, you know, being 2-0 is obviously great. Got a lot of work to do moving forward. Got a tough season ahead of us, but, we're taking it one at a time.
We're talking to Jordan Hicks. What about that win over Washington? That was a game where you held them scoreless in the first half and to just 3 points for the first three quarters. You'd probably tell me that you were not thrilled about allowing a couple of TDs in the fourth. But overall, how pleased were you with the way the defense showed up this past Sunday?
Yeah, obviously there's things we feel like we can improve. You know, especially with it being only the second game and performing like that, we were pleased in quite a bit of aspects. But, you know, a lot of what we're predicated on is stopping the run, and something that, you know, we want to do better is that. But, you know, we fixed a lot of things from last year, from this point to that point. And so, that's really what we're focused on. We're taking it one game at a time, one day at a time, just making sure that we're trying to detail our craft. And, obviously the outcome is determined on that.
Jordan Hicks is my guest. I like that. You're looking to detail your craft. Now, you're a captain this year. My sense is, with or without that title, you are always going to look to lead from the front. That said, what does the title mean to you? And knowing the respect that comes along with that, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, it means a lot. For me to say that, you know, me being a captain is something that I take lightly would be a lie. You know, I put a lot of weight in the respect and the leadership that I carry out there on the field. And you know, for me, it's always been a goal. It's been something that I've strived to become. And again, it's respect. You know, I say it all the time. I play this game for respect and to leave a legacy, you know, for those behind me and for my children. And so, you know, when you get something like that, that is a statement of respect. So, you know, it's appreciated. It's by the players and means a lot.
You know, I get a sense of how much the game means to you and how much your craft means to you. You and I have talked in the past about your time in Philadelphia and the bad luck that you had when it came to injuries. Then you break out last year with 150 tackles, which was third most in the NFL. How satisfying was it to have a season like that where you were impacting the game, helping your team week in and week out?
Yeah, very, very satisfying. You know, at the end of the day, Jim, it was about health. You know, I was able to play every snap last year. And I think, you know, the stats correlate with my ability to stay on the field. You know, I've always said as long as I can be out there, things will fall into place. And that's what happened last year. Obviously, we didn't perform the way we wanted to, you know, and obviously that's where we're trying to, you know, get better and correct. But personally, you know, my ability to show that I can stay on the field, you know, and create that momentum moving into this year, you know, meant a lot. And I think it's propelled you know, myself in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, it's like you want to have that momentum, Jordan, but the offseason was just so unusual, and it turned out to be unlike any other offseason that came before it. Like, you had some trips that you had planned, everything went up in the air. What was the experience like for you, and how did you and your family approach this particular offseason?
Yeah, it was completely different, obviously, for everybody. We hunkered down. I'm from Austin, Texas. We hunkered down in Austin, my family and I was lifting in the garage, running around the neighborhood, finding a field to do my drills on. You know, it was really a test of how much of a pro, you know, you can be. And, you know, a lot of the facilities around me were closed, so I was isolated. I had to do everything on my own. And so got creative, had some people in my corner that helped me out. But it was completely different. And, you know, it's kind of, I've been saying it's therapeutic to be back playing football around people, you know, getting back to normal life.
You know, that's got to be the case. What's it like? I mean, if it's therapeutic being around people and having that close proximity and doing the thing you love most, I get that. What's it like doing that, though, in front of an empty stadium?
We've had a lot of conversations on it. It's different. It is. You know, you watch the games on TV, and it's actually louder. The crowd noise seems louder on the TV than it actually is in person. In person, it's quiet in those stadiums. And so, you know, it's an adversity that, you know, we're all facing. And, you know, whoever faces it the best is going to come out on top. And, you know, it's part of the new normal that we're having to deal with now. And you know, we haven't made an excuse. We've just, you know, it is what it is, and we're looking past it.
You know, Jordan, I was saying on the NFL on CBS, I had an appearance this past Sunday, and one of my takes was about Kyler Murray, and I said, for my money, Lamar Jackson, pound for pound, is not the most electric guy in the NFL. Patrick Mahomes is not even the most electric player. I'm not saying that Kyler is yet in their class. I'm saying, for my money, he is the most electrifying athlete I've seen in a long, long time. As a linebacker, what do you think when you watch him? What impresses you the most about his game?
Well, I remember, you know, you could have a long list. I remember last year going against Kyler for the first time and, you know, him sitting in the pocket. And, you know, when I'm a linebacker, I'm trying to read the eyes of a quarterback, and it's tough because he's so small that you're, you know, and he's able to maneuver in the pocket, that you don't see the ball pop out until the last second. You know, you can't see his eyes, and the ball just pops out of the pocket, and he is putting those balls right exactly where they need to be. I think the most impressive thing to me, and I see it day in and day out, is his ability to put the ball exactly where it needs to be. Obviously, he's athletically gifted in every which way, you know, fast, and the offense is, you know, tough to guard. But when you've got a quarterback that can put it wherever it needs to be, off his back foot, on the run, sitting in the pocket, any type of situation, you know, I think that's what makes you special.
I mean, Jordan, isn't that so true? Like, you would know this. Anybody would know this if they watched him at Oklahoma. Anybody would know this if they watched him last season. It's amazing to me that anybody would sleep on his arm. Like, far be it for me to say, but this guy's arm talent is crazy. There's no throw that this guy can't make.
And it's, you know, he shoots it from the hip, and he's confident, and he believes in every throw that he makes. And, you know, we're right there with him. We believe he can do it, you know, and we see it every single day.
So, Jordan, what about the defense really quickly? How has it felt defensively for you with the Cards? Like, do you know what the identity of the defense is? And if so, how would you describe it?
Yeah, I think every year is different. I would still say, especially with the off season and not having preseason games, I think we're still navigating that. I think since day one, though, the thought process and the mindset has been attacking, physical, and executing type of defense, style of defense. We want to come after people. We want people to see different looks. And, you know, we want to be physical at the point of attack. And, you know, at the end of the day, defense, there's so many different defenses. The best ones are the ones who are physical and the ones who can execute. And, you know, that's who we want to be. We want to be dominant in that way.
Jordan Hicks joining me for a few more moments. So let me ask you this. You've been through a team growth process in the past, like you were in Philadelphia. That team wins 7 games in 2016 and then the Super Bowl the next year. What do you remember about that process, and do you see any similarities with what's going on in Arizona right now?
It's wild because I do. You know, it's interesting. We had that year we had a rookie quarterback and we had a first-time head coach, you know, coming in together, new offense, new guys on the team. And we went through that same scenario last year. So it's kind of my second time being in this. And what we were able to do and what we've done here is bring in a lot of veteran leadership, add to you know, the guys and the scheme, and you know, really detail, like I said, detail the craft. Year one in any system when it's brand new is tough to grasp, but when you're able to have that second year and be able to detail it and understand it deeper, and again, it goes back to identity. Now we can find our identity. Now we can understand who we're going to be, who we want to be, and take the next step. And, you know, obviously it's two completely different teams, two completely different scenarios, but there are similarities in there that you see and that are encouraging. And you know, at the end of the day, I'm a veteran that's been in that situation that has to lead and push us to that, because one thing we had on that team was a lot of veteran leadership pushing us through the tough times. So, you know, adversity strikes with every team, and the best ones who handle it come out on top.
Jordan Hicks, my guest. One last thought. I want to ask you about something off the field. Through your church in Arizona, you and your wife have supported so many families in the community. As it relates to COVID, you also got involved with Austin Pets Alive. It's a shelter in Austin, Texas, and you took care of all the adoption fees for people looking to adopt and provided a care package for them as well. Why was that something that was so important to you and something you wanted to support, and then what was the response like?
Yeah, well, you know, what we were all going through that time, and still are at this moment, you know, of uncertainty, seeing people's lives being turned upside down, and jobs being lost and homes being lost, and so much turmoil in this country that, you know, we wanted to help. And you know, the things that we love are people and animals. You know, they've touched our lives and you know, every which way. And so we reached out to our church and told them we wanted to do a match, and we maxed out the match, and we were able to fund 2 to 3 days worth of COVID testing at the church. And then, you know, we actually, with Austin Pets Alive, they were scrambling because they take in all these animals and they didn't have really anywhere to put it. So they were asking for adoptions. And so we did a campaign with them, and it was the response we got was unbelievable. We had, I think we tripled the average in a month of what a normal month looked like for adoption. So it was awesome. It shows the heart of, you know, the communities that we live in, and the people that were around. So, you know, we're just, you know, we want to help. And that really was the heart behind it.
Such good stuff. Arizona 2-0 on the year. They're in first in the NFC West. They're at home against Detroit on Sunday. He is a linebacker for the club and a Super Bowl champion, Jordan Hicks. Jordan, so good to have you back. Appreciate you in that conversation as always. Thanks so much for doing that.
Thanks, Jim.
Good night now.